With terrorism seeming to encircle the globe from Paris to San Bernardino, the government's watch lists are getting a lot of attention, both for who is on them and how they get used. For some insight, we turn to Paul Rosenzweig, senior advisor with the Chertoff Group and former deputy assistant secretary for policy at the Homeland Security Department. Paul, good to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's just talk about the basics of these databases. How are they created? Are they maintained separately? Is there a room that says here is where the terrorist databases are and you can't go in, that type of thing? How does it look when you're inside?
Well, the way it looks when you're inside is you're inside a computer system. They are the core database called the Terrorist Information Data Mart Environment, or TIDE, is maintained by the National Counterterrorism Center. And to get on that list, a subject of an investigation has to be nominated by one of our law enforcement or intelligence agencies, and that nomination has to be vetted. And if confirmed, a name gets entered onto this list. That's kind of the core list from which most of our other lists about terrorism-related activity are derived. For example, the TSA's no-fly and selectee lists are subsets of that large TIDE database list.
So anyone who is nominated by law enforcement anywhere could potentially be in that TIDE environment?
Well, that's right. But there are criteria for nomination. They couldn't nominate you or me. It's got to, the criteria involve connection to foreign terrorist interests, vetted fidelity of the data so that we don't just nominate some guy named Mohammed who lives in Kenya. It has to be, you know, enough specificity that we feel like we're identifying a particular individual, not, you know, a class of individuals. So for example, if the NSA intercepts a communication from between two people in which they are discussing a terrorist plot against France, if we have enough fidelity to identify who they are by name and or phone number, those names will get into the database.
And is this a relational database, or is it some kind of an unstructured mart of many different types of data that you can search with more modern tools?
Well, it is both. The principal way that it works is named-based, of course, and the large some of the names are, for example, variations on spellings. But it connects to other databases that are intended to be relational. For example, NSA's watch list of telephone numbers that are connected to terrorism because we found them on a cell phone that one of the bad guys in Paris used, say, or something like that. So then you will be able to integrate across and fuse that data when and if relational connections are made.
And is there ongoing operational access to it, or is it only really used when there's an incident like this?
I mean, No. It's in daily use. The TIDE database is the core source of all of our watch list checking at the border every day for arrivals. It's the core source of our visa consular lookout system that's operated by our embassies abroad. It's at the heart of the no-fly list for TSA. It gets propagated out to consumers, subsets of it, essentially on a daily basis.
So, for example, if someone is applying for TSA pre, like I'm about to, then I would be checked against that database as part of the process of vetting me to for pre-clearance.
That's right. You'd also be checked against a criminal database. The National Crime Information Center contains a separate database that's not terrorism but crime, so you wouldn't get pre-check either because you're a terrorist or because you are an axe murderer.
By getting to the FBI, then you get fingerprints. That's the main source of what's in that one, the NCIS.
That's right. That's why you get your fingerprint. That's why they take your fingerprints, though they'll also run a name check on you as well. The fingerprints are to fix your identity against a biographic identifier like your name or your address to make sure that you are really the person you say you are.
We're speaking with Paul Rosenzweig, senior advisor with the Chertoff Group, former deputy assistant secretary for policy at Homeland Security. And beyond, so in other words, the TIDE has a analytical use as well as a transactional use.
Yes.
And so from a management standpoint, aside what's in there, what kinds of managerial processes go on to maintain quality to make sure that it's available and that the speeds are good and all this kind of thing?
Well, as you would imagine, there's an entire book on that that covers everything from nomination to data fidelity to the security of the data and its scrubbing before it's passed out to other people. Rules for aging out. If you've been on for a number of years and there've been no additional entries, there'll be an automated request back to ask the nominating agency, is this still a live name or should we delete it? Periodically, the NCTC and the FBI, which runs the Terrorist Screening Center, will try and just go through and do a scrub, an audit as well. In which they weed out bad entries, which happen kind of naturally in any database. You're going to have, bad data entries for any number of reasons. So there is behind all this an entire management process that is intended with a fairly high degree of effectiveness to make this as good a database as we can create.
And what about the issue of quality control? Because in many cultures, Muslim, for example, and in a lot of Asian nations, there are very few names that are used for a great many number of people. And so it's easy to mistake aliases, or if someone uses, as the famous case of using, Edward M. Kennedy as an alias, how does that process work to get some fidelity to who the person really is?
Well, that's precisely why we try and enrich the database with more identifying information. If you've flown recently, you've no doubt given your name and your date of birth, right? The date of birth is intended as a way of disambiguating you from all of the other people with your name. And if you're an Ed Kennedy, the date of birth back in 1917 or whenever he was born would disambiguate him from the Ed Kennedy who is the suspected terrorist born in the 1960s, hopefully. And so we try and enrich the database with as much of that disambiguating data as we can, phone numbers, date of births, addresses, things like that.
And I guess we understand that the budgetary information about this whole operation, that's a classified deal?
Yeah, it is.
And does Congress ever show interest in what's going on there? I mean, do they get revealed, do at least some members understand the inner workings of it to a degree that the general public cannot?
Yes. For one thing, at a classified level, it's obviously discussed in the intelligence committees. At an unclassified level, there have been several inspector general reports that have been issued. For example, one subset of these of this tide is the terrorist screening database, which is run by the Terrorist Screening Center, which is owned by the FBI. And the Department of Justice's Inspector General has written several penetrating reports about some of the operational lapses that he sees in some of the managerial things that we were just talking about, which have led, I hope, systematically to improvements in the system.
So there are some interagency issues that are classic, I guess, in nature.
Yes. I mean, who owns this database? There's competition. In general, I think it would be fair to characterize this as one of the pretty good successes in the post-9/11 world for getting everybody to play nice together. But that doesn't mean that everybody leaves all the tensions at the door.
Paul Rosenzweig is senior advisor with the Chertoff Group and former deputy assistant secretary for policy at Homeland Security. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.